Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is Tulsa poet and writing teacher Victoria McArdor. In 2015, Tupelo Press invited her to participate in their 30-30 project, writing 30 poems, one a day for 30 days, each one uploaded to their online website at the end of the day. At the end of the period, she had the germ of an idea to share with young writers here in Tulsa. It's a part of her work with Mused, a poetry and collaborative arts group, as well as the makings of a book. That book, titled Reverse Selfie, is now out. In it, she took her poems, which utilizes Tulsa area landmarks as prompts and inspiration, to tell a larger story of the idea of the reverse selfie, looking outward towards others instead of inward to ourself, or to paraphrase one of her lines in her poetry, to look at this rather than look at me. Victoria McArdor holds an MFA from Oklahoma State University, is a former adjunct professor at the University of Tulsa, and is the co-founder of Tulsa's poetry and collaborative arts nonprofit, Mused. Her poetry and prose has been published by Prism International, the Denver Quarterly, This Land, Cincinnati Review, the Colorado Review, the Shanghai Literary Review, World Literature Today, and the Carolina Quarterly, among others. Her 2017 poem, Bordeaux 2000 Deconstructed, was nominated for a Pushcart Prize. In the Reverse Selfie Project, she and photographer Matt Phipps feature their collection of 30 poems and photos. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Victoria, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hi, Rich. Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about this project, Reverse Selfie. This is actually came out of a Poetry Foundation project, correct?
It did, yeah. So in June 2015, Tupelo Press asked me to be a part of their 30-30 project. The 30-30 project, they ask a poet to write a poem every day for 30 days, and then they put that poem immediately every day on their international website and try to, you know, get some traction for the artist that's participating in them. And then it's a fundraiser for their nonprofit, too. So it's a win-win, I think.
Mm-hmm. And they do that every month?
They do that every month.
So your month was what?
June of
2015.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, if you can write a poem about anything, you open yourself up to maybe too much. So I wanted to have a little scope around the project. So I chose different landmarks and hallmarks of one of my favorite cities, Tulsa, the city that reared me, and just wanted to give a different perspective on some of these iconic places and a more contemporary spin. So I'm a millennial, and I'm proud of that. I think it's a new, interesting time. It's a brave new world out there. And I wanted to grapple a little bit with the concept of social media and selfies and kind of turn myself away from the perspective. But also, I can't tell a story and I can't use the word I without being a part of it in some way. So I think it's good for people to keep themselves a part of the picture, but also look outwards
too. I was really struck by that viewpoint, because when I think of most poetry, I think of it as introspective and, mm-hmm. and basically the literary equivalent of a selfie most of the time.
Interesting. Yeah.
I mean, so much poetry is.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it also teaches you how to have emotions and how to be human. When you hear all of these famous authors of the past kind of explain these universal concepts, it helps you kind of feel those things too. So yeah, I didn't, you know, not to say that each of these poems uses the word I in its best way. I don't necessarily think that poetry always does that. So there, I do take a lot of creative liberties. And
I think it was in your introduction, you said, I wanted to take the emphasis from the hashtag me to hashtag us.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. To kind of be more present in these moments that I was having with other people. You know, looking back on it now, I think June 2015 was my biggest and fullest month because I had to pay closer attention to details and draw in associations of things that necessarily wouldn't be associated. So if I go to Quick Trip early in the morning and I'm grabbing a coffee and someone asks me for my change and I give that to them, how is that similar to someone buying me a drink when I go to the bar later that night? And how do we connect these instances into something about us and not just something about me.
I think in taking that approach where you're going to write about landmarks, it could still be overwhelming, because do you write about that Quick Trip experience or do you write about something else or something you maybe had planned the day before?
Right. And so it was really difficult. Of course, I wasn't able to go to all of these places every day. You know, I had a work and I had a life and all of that type of stuff. But so, and a lot of these situations are imagined. And mm-hmm. so when I would have friends, my friend Megan Shepherd helped me with the living kitchen. I said, I need a location and I need a story to happen inside of that. And she's like, hey, let's pretend that we go and this is what we do. And I've been there, so I'm going to give you details. And that was a really exciting experience too.
Now, it's interesting. There's some really wonderful lines in a lot of these poems. And one comes from which I thought was an unusual choice, Southern Hills. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a metaphor on the whole idea of golf and this sort of leisure time and the money you spend in having your leisure time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think actually this is a quote from somebody else, but it says, when things dominate us, we become thing-like. It gets back into this sort of reverse selfie idea that's at the heart of the book.
Right. How are we making ourselves a thing when we create this brand and this persona around who we are? And how does that thing kind of distance ourselves from the real thing, the vulnerable kind of sticky thing that's underneath it? Yeah, and I think that's what poetry is always trying to do, is to get to the point or to the heart of something that's a little bit grander than just the experience that's underlining it. So when we work in schools and we talk about poetry, we talk about us having these different layers of subconscious in our brain. And so when we write poetry, sometimes that can be an experience of just pulling those moments down and kind of tricking yourself into realizing them again. Our subconscious is what drives the conversations that we have, the relationships that we have, everything that we do. And sometimes we're just going around in these circles doing the same things without realizing why or what we're doing them for. And so when we realize some of those things in our subconscious, then I think it helps us out a lot too.
Now, when they approach you about doing this 30 poems in 30 days, are you a quick writer, or will you, when you're writing a poem, is it going to be like a week to really come up with a finished poem, or was this something you took too easily?
You know, that's a great question. I forget, I know I'm plagiarizing here, I forget which artist said this, but he said I trained my muse to show up every morning at 8 a.m. I love that idea of, you know, putting yourself in a habit of writing. And so that's what I try to do. I actually, since the 30-30 project, I've still been writing every day. And again, we were talking earlier, it might just be kind of a couplet or it might be a full poem, but it also helps me plant ideas. And so I might be writing about one thing day after day after day after day after day, and then I can go back and I can kind of reform that into maybe one real poem instead of just having all of these scraps lying around.
What was the experience like writing a poem every day and then, you know, hitting the send button at, you know,
terrifying.
At the end of the day?
Right. Really horrible. If you go back, and please don't, go back to the Tupelo's 3030 website and read those poems from June 2015 versus what you're seeing in the book with your selfie. Completely different after I've had time to
Oh, we'll definitely do that.
Better and edit them. Yeah, that's definitely needed.
But the poems that are in this volume have been edited and mm-hmm. reworked. But,
edited a little bit,
But I would think it would have been a sort of a great challenge every day.
It absolutely resonates.
But you also said, you know, you work every day too. You have mm-hmm. a full-time job. So how do you balance that? I mean, it's one thing if you're just living as a poet mm-hmm. or, you know, a writing teacher and poet, where you're sort of surrounded by your craft all day, but mm-hmm. you're working in a very different field.
I am. Yeah.
In many ways. I mean, you teach writing as well.
I do. I would say the benefit of doing the writing project while, you know, doing the working stuff too is again, just paying a little bit more closer attention to the ideas that poetry kind of brings to me. So Daniel Pink in his book To Sell as Human talks about moments of awe and how moments of awe last longer than ordinary moments. So we could all win the lottery potentially and have as much money as we would ever need, but there's no way to win more time unless you put yourself in instances of awe. So when you teach something to a child and they adhere to it and now they have knowledge from what you said. That's a moment of awe to me. Or when you just take a few moments to pay attention to a perfectly formed orchid, that's definitely a moment of awe. And also when you, in one of the poems I'm talking about, you know, just taking a moment to break out of what you would do during the day and go swim in a little pond with some friends. And then it's just the quaint little moment of being wet and then drying off again, just as you're out there enjoying a summer day. So kind of the small nuances of life made my life bigger and fuller during those 30 days than it has been in a really, really long time.
And you're thinking about those things and you're writing about those things.
Because I have to think about them because I have to go home and write them down so that I can send them into this project. So, yeah, I would love to do it again. I think everyone should.
Well, why don't you read us a poem? I was thinking Porter Peaches. That's a really good one because this is right in the middle of the project, I assume.
Yes, it is. It is in the middle of the project. Okay, so Porter Peaches, this is day 12. Yeah, so almost right in the middle. Okay, reverse selfie. Each summer we act as kings who take full advantage of what can be unearthed. So we drove to Porter, city infamous for being as regal and wasteful as pure sugar. Time fell in pink flowers and replaced itself with red peaches. We picked with greed, knowing we would be peasants soon. And as soon as your hand raises to the branch in an instant of awe, it might also grab a memory of the time a lifeguard pulled your body out of the ocean. Then, as you bite, you might feel the way he gave oxygen back to the deep pit in your skin. To say it's sweet isn't enough. This juice is the soul's season, and each time it gives a little life back to you.
I loved every line in that poem. I love the idea that Porter is a city that is as regal and elegant and wasteful as pure sugar.
Pure sugar. Well, thank you, Rich. Thanks for saying that. Yeah, this was a fun extended metaphor that I just kept pulling through there with. I wasn't sure how that instance snuck its way about, you know, what does a lifeguard and being in the ocean have to do with eating a peach in Porter, Oklahoma. But again, I think it's fun to pull in the disassociations and see what happens.
Well, it's about experiencing life to its fullest, which, you know, if you're a lifeguard is giving you back your life, it's that sort of important moment.
You're absolutely right. Great read, Rich.
Yeah. My guest today is Victoria McArdor. She is a poet and writer and co-founder of the poetry and collaborative arts group Mused. Her new project, which was based on a 30-day poem a day project in 2015, is titled Reverse Selfie. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as I'm looking at the open page, I see each poem has this what beautiful photograph next to it, the work of Matt Phipps.
Yes.
So you did this in June of 2015. I guess Matt did a similar project with photography a year later. Is that right?
He did. A year later, Matt came in and, you know, to have a book of poetry, I think, is beautiful. And then these days, photography is first and foremost on our mind. So I thought it would be really cool to pair each of the poems with photography. So I reached out to one of my friends, Matt Phipps. He's an international photographer and videographer. He's actually in Mexico now filming. So he came back and in the same spirit of, you know, I wrote a poem every day for 30 days. Matt did kind of a reverse Afrascus. So an Afrascus poem is writing a poem about a piece of art or a photo. So Matt took a photo based on each of these poems to accompany a little life with them. He asked me to be the model for the poems. And again, going back to that first person eye, and with the concept of reverse selfie, I didn't want it to be my face first and foremost in the book. So he happened to ask a very beautiful woman and a novelty to Tulsa in and of herself, Nikki Atchley, and then told me that he asked Nikki and she just happened to be one of my really great friends. So it just kind of worked out perfectly.
And she's going all over the city.
So he's following her around with a camera.
And he's taking really interesting pictures that sort of, I think in some ways they really do illuminate the text you're talking about in all these various places.
Oh, good. I hope so. That's the intent. Thanks, Rich.
Yeah. What guided your choice of the landmarks you were going to use as inspirations? And I assume you just used them as sort of a, I guess, a prompt, if you will.
Yeah, they were kind of used just as a prompt. Some days, for instance, I believe it was June 2nd or 3rd, was the 18th year anniversary of Timothy McVeigh's execution. So I wanted to talk about that again. So that became the second day or third day, I forget now. Another day with the Gilchrist Museum was kind of a landmark or a time mark where the Supreme Court gave gay rights.
Marriage equality. Yeah, the Supreme Court decision legalizing marriage equality across the United States.
Yes.
Now, had you already chosen Gilchrist Museum at that point, or was that a day of decision?
I guess that was a day of decision. I don't know why those two instances kind of came to be. Gilchrist Museum had California Impressionism in the exhibit, so a lot of plein air, and you know, California also like leading the gay activism, and how, you know, Tulsa has that thriving community here too. And I don't know why they wanted to come together that way.
It's interesting that it did, because you use that imagery of California Impressionism all throughout the poem. Mm-hmm. And you know, you talk about going to the museum and celebrating a wedding at the museum, and the final line of the poem is just exquisite. It says, finally, the scenery was reflecting what had been in plein air for a long time now.
Yeah. I'm glad it happened.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're reflecting what society wants and needs.
Now, the day one and day 30 was interesting because it sort of reflected, and you're a lifelong Tulsan too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tulsans can sort of have an inferiority complex. I think it's changing now. I think, you know, don't hate the 918 and all the, you know, the movements that have been going on.
Steve Kluck.
Yeah, you know, and all these people who, you know, when I was growing up, Tulsan said, well, I'm going to go to New York, or I'm going to go to Kansas City or Dallas. You know, that was, you know, sort of the, and now that sort of is changing. Mm-hmm. But there's this sort of instance of leaving Tulsa and coming back again. And the two bookends sort of reflect that. That's day one, Tulsa International Airport, which is mm-hmm. really, I really love that poem. You might want to read that one. And then the other one's the interdispersal loop. And even though the imagery was different, it always reminds me that when you come back after you've been away, you know, if you're taking a road trip away, you know, when you're coming back, as you approach the interdispersal loop, you know, you see the skyline, and there's just something, I don't know, it's like nostalgic and sort of heart-tugging.
It is.
And I don't know what it is.
Coming back to Tulsa after being gone, and maybe because it's so comfortable, but it just feels like you're getting a big hug from the city. And I forget who is doing this. Jim Hawkins told me this recently, but that we've got a new slogan that we're trying to pick up here in Tulsa called Comfortably Cosmopolitan is what we're calling Tulsa now.
I kind of like it, but I think it's kind of dumb too. I mean, we're always coming up with these new slogans to, you know, attract people instead of just, you know, let's meet Tulsa, you know?
Right.
There's a reason why we're here to begin with.
No, that's absolutely true. Yeah. But, and so there is something, I think the first poem kind of talks to the anxiousness being in Tulsa, and maybe that the next best thing is going to happen or will come. And maybe that's what you're alluding to in other cities, that maybe just more opportunity in some way. But also that's not really true. I mean, opportunity can be found wherever you just want to kind of turn it over here in Tulsa. And so I think, you know, as an adult growing up here, I'm kind of grappling with those ideas about how wonderful it is and how happiness is here, and just trying to be more comfortable with it.
Now, did you ever hit a point during the 30 days where you said, I'm not gonna get the poem done?
Yes. Yes. And then those are the days that I turned in four lines, and it was of a hallmark or a landmark that I wasn't really excited about. I didn't do much research into. And so, yeah, that's when the revisions come in pretty handy.
Now, one of the ones, there were two that I wanted to read one of these maybe. I really enjoyed the imagery around the Golden Driller.
Oh,
which you had this, it was just a fun poem. Yeah. But the other one, which I really thought was very thought-provoking, was Greenwood.
Okay.
And you tell the story, you sort of, the narrator tells their own story of a moment like the moment that sparked, you know, that we believe sparked the race riot mm-hmm. years ago of a white woman and a black man having touching hands, or, you know, we don't know what happened in that elevator mm-hmm. years ago, but mm-hmm. but whatever it did. And I really thought that poem. Would you like to read
sure,
one of those?
Sure, I will. Okay, so this is day 25, reverse selfie, Greenwood. Someone once told me the race riot on Greenwood started at the end of a love story. As a white girl entering an elevator screamed when her boyfriend's black hand grabbed her. As the fireworks after the baseball game set the sky of Greenwood Avenue to flame, I can't help but think of the black man I used to love. Once I pushed him away from me in the produce aisle, only to later chase him through the frozen foods. If no one called the police, did we change the world at all? Did the girl run through the streets looking for him as her father ran after with his torch? This red color of summer travels much slower than the sound of feet running behind you. And in this crossfire, we who have been grazed by fear feel spared. Some say he was never her boyfriend, and how sensational to think love started a race war. Some think it wild to think there was anything more we were fighting for.
That's really lovely. That's my guest, Victoria McArdor, from her new collection of poems titled Reverse Selfie, which began as a poem a day for 30 days in June of 2015. And features the photography of Matt Phipps, and she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, as a co-founder of Mused, one of the things you're working with kids and poetry and collaborative writing and collaborative arts, mm-hmm. and you're taking this project that you went through and sharing it with kids in the classroom. What is that experience like?
Absolutely amazing, Rich. And I think maybe... Now, looking, this is why I had to write this book, because what happened to me in writing this book really, and this is what I knew from being a lifetime lover of poetry and getting my master's degree and being in that program, is that writing really does change your life and give you a voice and help you figure out what's going on in your head. All the ancient Greek sages said to know thyself was the reason that we're here on this planet. But I think kind of contemporary culture kind of changes that view. And so instead of knowing ourselves, we're taught to find ourselves. And that's usually just kind of escapism. Like, well, when we do the next job or when we're in the next city or when we have the next family, we're going to be happier. But that's just escaping into something else. Or society is now teaching us show thyself instead of know thyself. So if I can put a picture on here, if I can do this and then I can do this, then I'm out there and I'm being seen as my brand, and then that's knowing myself, but it's not. So when I was in my master's and I had to write constantly, I would write in the morning and then I would put the writing aside and I would go teach a class, or I would go take a class, or I would go to work, and then I would come back later in the evening and I would pick it up and I would read the poem and I would say, who wrote this? What is this here? Like, certainly I'm not this stereotypical, or I don't have these judgments, or, you know, I have better things to think or say than this. But it really helped me to get to know myself and for me to say, no, Victoria, you are this way. So you need to do whatever you can to change it. Or you are this way and that's wonderful. So, you know, foster these abilities in yourself. And so that's essentially what we're doing with students, is helping them know the person that they are, giving them time to think. Thought, T.S. Eliot said, is the silent switch that sets man's destiny into motion. And it kind of seems like when I was in school, they taught us what to think, but not necessarily how to think. And critical thinking is an amazing tool that we're just kind of helping them wrap their heads around.
So as you're working with these kids, is it more difficult today, given the whole idea that, you know, I can put, you know, I'm a brand and I need to be, I mean, I would think these are kids that have grown up with social media and this sort of idea of, I'm going to put forth my identity to the public mm-hmm. through every device, and every device I don't even know exists out there. Mm-hmm. Can they do this inner reflection as well as, say, a generation or two ago, or I assume they can.
They can. It doesn't come naturally to them, I don't think. But once
I don't think it comes naturally to any generation, really. You know,
right?
You think of several generations ago, we don't talk about these sort of things. You know.
That's true too. Yeah. So through our program, we're teaching. We teach what narcissism is and who Narcissus was. The ancient Greek god who drowned by staring at himself in the pond, and how that's really similar to the mirrors on our phones, that we're just kind of drowning in this self-obliteration. So we're teaching what narcissism is versus what empathy is. And then we're teaching different levels of self-confidence and how to have self-confidence, but not, you know, be too much of a jerk where it's all about you, and how to be a little bit vulnerable, and how to have pride, and how to have pride of ownership. So we're teaching these ideas along with poetry and prosody. So it's a literacy course, but it's also an emotional literacy course. It's creative writing, but it's also critical writing. And so we take them through this 6-week curriculum. And on the 6th week, we have a poetry performance where the students get to read, stand up in front of their classmates and in front of their parents and teachers, and again, have that pride of ownership piece about something that they've written about themselves and who they are deeper than their surface level.
And are you getting interesting work coming out of it?
The most amazing work coming out of this. Yeah, we're working in Street School, Tulsa School of Arts and Sciences, Edison, and hoping to get with McLean and Hale this year too. And giving these kids some time to think about who they are and who they want to be. We do mental mapping about what our goals are. We write about what our favorite things are and how to craft a more perfect person for ourselves and to know ourselves and not be led by other people. The impact is pretty staggering. We're working with Dr. Bradley Brummel of TU, and he's an organizational psychiatrist, and he's going to help us with our impact studies and the surveys that we're doing and all that kind of stuff. So we look forward to sharing with Tulsa all of the amazing impacts that we're having with these kids. But right now they're writing some really, really fantastic poems.
That's great. That's great to hear. Would you leave us with one more poem? How about the one you mentioned to me you really enjoyed, as that's the building tunnels?
Yes, the downtown tunnels. So this is day 23, reverse selfie, the downtown tunnels. All of us on the underground tunnel tour know history can be a ghost following us around. Memories kept up behind us with their tiny echoes, asking for forgiveness, never permission. The haunting happens as an empty bank vault waits to be filled with a metaphor about void we won't design, something we wish we could pull out of a pocketed mind, travel back in time, and put back where we found it.
All right. The name of the project is titled Reverse Selfie. Victoria, thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, thank you so much for having me.
Poet Victoria McArdor speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her work, along with the work of photographer Matt Phipps, makes up their latest project, Reverse Selfie, and proceeds from the book benefit the Reverse Selfie Project, a 6-week critical and creative writing workshop in Tulsa Public Schools. For more information on the book, visit musedorganization.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.